Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, breaking news, a brutal beatdown for Trump in court today. The judge telling Trump lawyers they're losing all credibility as the former chief of the National Enquirer reveals he was, quote, Trump's eyes and ears during the presidential campaign. Plus, George Conway was in the courtroom today with Trump. This is Conway, a lifelong conservative, is taking a major leap to help the Biden campaign. He's going to tell you exactly what he's doing. It's a big step. And Republicans turning on, quote unquote, Moscow Marjorie big time tonight. One senior senator putting the blame on Marjorie Taylor Greene for the party losing in November. Right bullseye. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. And out front tonight, we begin with the shutdown. The judge in Trump's hush money trial telling Trump's lawyers, quote, you're losing all credibility with the court. This is as they were struggling to defend Trump for 10 alleged violations of his gag order. And we're actually, as I speak right now, on standby for a ruling from Judge Mershon after a hearing that court watchers described as disastrous. Those were the words that we heard for Trump. Now, let's just show you this sketch that shows how tense things got in the courtroom. The judge again and again pressing Trump's legal team for evidence that Trump's posts were just responses to, quote, political attacks. Trump's team, though, did not have a response to that. And Mershon, in what was a dramatic admonishment, told Trump's team, and I quote him, well, I'm just telling you that you have presented nothing. And I've asked you 8 or 9 times. Show me the exact post that he was responding to. And you have been unable to do that even once. Well, the result of this was Trump visibly angry when he left court today.
I'm not allowed to talk, but people are allowed to talk about me. So they can talk about me, they can say whatever they want, they can lie, but I'm not allowed to say anything. I just have to sit back.
Well, of course, that's not true just even on the Trump side of it. The gag order only bars him from talking about 3 specific categories of things. Speaking publicly about potential witnesses, publicly about prosecutors, which does not include commenting on the judge, the district attorney, or staff members. So he can do all those things. He just can't talk about witnesses or prosecutors and can't speak publicly about jurors. By the way, as for those jurors, if they were to go out and say something nasty about Trump, they'd get kicked off the jury. So we are on standby for that gag order ruling at this moment. It comes as the former chief of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, took the stand in Trump's trial for the second day. And Pecker admitted under oath that he had agreed to be what he called Trump's eyes and ears during Trump's 2016 candidacy for the White House. He detailed how Trump's lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, asked him to help the campaign specifically by doing this, finding a story about Trump that was bad, buying it from somebody and then never running it. So it was killed. It's called catch and kill. And also then promoting negative stories about people running against Trump or who Trump did not like. And we actually have a special report later this hour detailing some of these negative stories. You're going to want to see what Trump was promoting about Joe Biden and others that everybody was seeing on the front covers of the checkout line. But we begin our special coverage this hour with Paula Reed, who is out front live outside the New York courthouse. As Paula, I know you will be every day during this historic trial. What are you learning about why prosecutors are starting their case with David Pecker?
Pecker is the perfect first witness for the prosecution because he is able to lay out how he was working directly with Trump and Michael Cohen to catch and kill negative stories about Trump. And he's explaining to the jury how he was doing this, not just because he and Trump were lifelong friends, because he and Michael Cohen wanted to influence the 2016 election. Former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker back on the witness stand today, where he shared details of his decades-long friendship with Donald Trump and how he eventually used his position to help Trump in the 2016 election. Under questioning from prosecutors, Pecker described a meeting he had with Trump and his former attorney, Michael Cohen, in 2015, where they asked, "What can I do and what my magazine could do to help the campaign?" Pecker testified that he responded saying, what I would do is I would run or publish positive stories about Mr. Trump, and I would publish negative stories about his opponents. I said I would be your eyes and ears. He told the jury he saw the agreement as mutually beneficial. It would help his campaign, and it would also help me. Pecker said he began meeting with Cohen a minimum of every week, and if there was an issue, could be daily. He said he would go directly to Cohen when confronted with a negative story about Trump. The prosecution questioned Pecker in detail about a doorman who tried to sell a story about Trump allegedly fathering a child with another woman as Trump sat in court and shook his head. Pecker said he directed the editor of the Inquirer to negotiate a number, a price, to buy the story and take it off the market. The doorman was paid $30,000 for the story, even though it later proved to be false. Pecker told the court if the story got out to another publication or another media outlet, it would have been very embarrassing to the campaign. Pecker claimed if the story were true, it would probably be the biggest sale of the National Enquirer since the death of Elvis Presley, but then admitted if it were true, he wouldn't have published the story until after the election. Court is not in session tomorrow, but Pecker will be back on the stand Thursday facing more questions about the effort to catch and kill the story of Karen McDougal, a woman who allegedly had a year-long affair with Trump. But then prosecutors are going to press Pecker on why he didn't catch and kill the story of Stormy Daniels and instead passed her story off to Michael Cohen. Aaron.
All right, Paula, thank you very much. And I want to go now to Stu Zakim, who worked closely with David Pecker at the National Enquirer's parent company. Elizabeth Williams is also with us, the sketch artist who was in the courtroom with Donald Trump today and, of course, has been throughout this trial. Now you all know her. And our legal experts, Karen Friedman Agnifilo and Stacey Schneider. So, all right, so great to have all of you. Let me just start straight off with you, Stu. You were Pecker's communications chief at AMI, right? So you worked with him, you saw him, you know how all of this worked.
Right.
In intimate detail. So Pecker testified today, he told Trump he'd be his eyes and ears during the campaign. So as you're seeing the transcript of exactly what he said today, what stood out to you as you heard Pecker describe the way catch and kill worked?
Which was pretty amazing. So until now, it's only been speculated how it really worked. But Pecker clearly outlined it under oath today, how it all played out. And the benefit to him, obviously, was incurring goodwill with Trump and having that access to him, and vice versa, burying bad stories about Trump, highlighting his good stuff, and burying his enemies. So it was like a mutual, in their minds, a win-win. I could help you, you help me. And that's pretty much how Pecker operated all along, and why the Inquirer has the reputation that it has.
So, Stacey, to this, I know there was key testimony for you about how Trump used this agreement, this catch-and-kill agreement, as Stu's talking about, as Pecker testified today, to harm Trump's political opponents as well, right? So he would catch bad stories about Trump and kill him, and then he would promote bad stories about people running against Trump. So Pecker testifies, quote, Michael Cohen would send me information about Ted Cruz or Ben Carson or Marco Rubio. That was the basis of our story. And then we would embellish it from there. And then, just so everyone understands what that meant, the Ted Cruz sex scandal, five secret mistresses, bungling surgeon Ben Carson left sponge in patient's brain. I remember that. Who doesn't remember that, right? There was even some fake picture.
Yes.
The sponge. Okay. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, healthiest individual ever elected. Okay. What is the prosecution showing jurors here?
Okay, this is very strategic on the part of the prosecution. And David Pecker, who is just a background witness in this case, actually dealt a very devastating blow to the Trump defense. Because, especially the part you're mentioning, where there was an arrangement that Michael Cohen would, according to David Pecker, would call him up after one of the Republican debates. And whoever was doing the best in the debate, he would direct him, David Pecker, to run a devastating story about that person. And what's that? That's setting up the trial for the jury to see is the fact that Trump allegedly seems to have a pattern and history of gaining an unfair advantage during that election. And I think that that point, although subtle today, is going to come back later on in the trial. As it's the same theme that Trump is being tried on right now, unlawfully influencing the election and then covering it up through paying off Stormy Daniels and then
So it's making the election interference case. It's putting that into the ether.
Yeah, so it's the same theme as what he's being tried for right now, allegedly. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really subtle and good talking point later on for the DA.
So, Elizabeth, as you're watching in your sketches today, you can see Trump looking at David Pecker on the stand, right? Yeah. This went on for almost 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So when, as you're watching him, when was he most interested? When was he, I remember yesterday you were talking about, you know, showing his interest by him being at the edge of his seat, literally in the way that you drew the oil, the oil pastel.
Exactly right.
So what did you notice today?
Yeah, today when he started out, he was doing that closing the eyes thing, which I look at him through the video, at the video screen with my binoculars, because I want to make sure he's really closing his eyes, and he's closing his eyes. I'm wondering, okay, he gives him a couple of glances. But then when they start talking about McDougal.
Karen McDougal, the playmate that he allegedly had a year-long affair with.
The eyes are open. The arms start folding. When he folds his arms, now that I've drawn him a bunch of times, he folded his arms when he was arraigned in Miami. And he folded his arms several times during E. Jean Carroll. And that means something is not right with Donald Trump. And he is now laser focused on David Pecker. Okay, because prior to that, I look at him quite a bit. And he was somewhat paying attention. But the McDougal testimony, that seemed to really get to him.
Mm-hmm. And that, Karen, obviously, while this case is about payments made for the silence to Stormy Daniels and you know whether that was a felony count in election law, Karen McDougal is very relevant to this story because she is a person who has detailed an extensive affair, she says, she had with the former president. And David Pecker and the National Enquirer was obviously involved in getting rid of that one as well.
Yeah, I mean, the prosecution is painting this entire scheme as a criminal conspiracy. And this is a conspiracy between David Pecker, Donald Trump, and Michael Cohen, and that they all got together. A conspiracy requires two or more people to get together, have an agreement, and the agreement is to do something unlawful. And what they're saying is what they were doing that was unlawful was they were unlawfully trying to influence the election. So this is all part of the scheme, the criminal scheme.
And they have set up that there was a meeting where this was explicitly discussed, right? So even though this was a matter of, as you're saying, Stu, this is how things were done, that there was a meeting that they said, look, I'm running for president, and this is what we're going to do. That's what the prosecution says happened. So Pecker is not done yet. He comes back to the stand when trial resumes. So how do you think he will do under cross-examination?
Well, that would be really the interesting test because he comes across, as we've seen, very smooth and savvy. And let me just tell you what the facts are. He's never responded to threats being attacked. So they're challenging his credibility, which he has worked, the prosecution made him look like the nicest guy in the world. You're going to see his true colors come out. He's a fighter. And when he's attacked, similar to Trump, he fights back pretty hard, which is why he has this aggressive behavior and reputation throughout publishing, that you don't mess with Pecker.
Right. And this is going to be an awkward situation, right? He is the first witness brought by the prosecution, not because he wants to be sitting there. We understand he and Trump don't speak anymore, but it's a long friendship. He made a point of saying hi to his table yesterday. So this cross is going to be very revealing.
Very, very revealing. And I think what the defense, my prediction is what they're going to do to clean up this mess that was made today because Trump looked awful, is they will say to David Pecker, you've been approached by many, many dozens of celebrities through every year and their attorneys trying to clean up bad stories, or they've threatened you not to run stories about their clients or somebody famous because they're going to threatening to sue you. And I'll think the defense will just say, this is just tabloid journalism. This isn't, Trump didn't go after the mainstream media and try to get them to do something different. This is not really consequential journalism. I'm sure National Enquirer won't be happy to hear that. But, they'll clean it up as best they can, see if the jury buys it.
All right, so as this is happening today, Karen, you also had and we are waiting right now, I mean, we could get it right now, the gag order ruling coming down from Judge Mershon, whether Trump violated the gag order nearly a dozen times in tweets and things he has said about people he's banned from saying things about, potential witnesses primarily among them. Today, it did not go well for Trump's lawyer. The judge told Todd Blanche, and this is the quote that I mentioned at the top of the show, you're losing all credibility with the court. And that I've given you, what, 8 or 9 opportunities to show me why he posted this in response to something political, as you're alleging, and you have not answered that question once. So how badly did this go for Trump?
I think it went fairly badly for Trump. A lawyer has to make arguments, right? And the judge has said he expects and welcomes vigorous arguments on behalf of clients. But you can't step over the line and do things that are not credible. And that's what the judge was signaling to Todd Blanche today, mm-hmm. is that, number one, this is a hearing. It was your opportunity to present evidence. You could have presented, Donald Trump could have said what he thought or what he meant or what he was trying to do. But for you to just make an argument without presenting that evidence that Donald Trump was, quote, trying very hard to comply with the court order, or saying that the other thing that he said that I think really made the judge say you have no credibility with me or you're losing credibility was when the defense attorney said, look, the prosecution only asked for a couple of the tweets to be, or the couple of the postings to be a violation. So therefore, they let other ones go. They must have waived it. The gag order doesn't stand. That is not going to fly in Judge Merchant's courtroom. Only he can say whether or not the gag order is imposed or whether it stands or whether it doesn't. And so the fact that he would make an argument like that Trump's trying to do it without more, Merchant said that's ridiculous and he's not
having
it.
Which also just defies belief. I mean, you know, he retweets things and does these things. Elizabeth, there was one sketch I just wanted to show. There was a moment between Trump, the judge, and Trump's lawyer, a very tense back and forth that you drew here. I mentioned it at the top of the program. We were talking about this gag order. What did you actually see here?
Well, what happens in those situations is you're drawing people who are constantly moving, and then you're seeing that this tension is building up. I mean, Marchand's a pretty cool character. He doesn't get easily riled up. But as Blanche is continuing on this path of this argument and Marchand's feeling like he's not being heard, you see now Marchand's arms going up, so I have to now add the arm to the body, and Blanche's arm is moving in his hand. But these are all important gestures because they show actually what happened. These are actually what they were doing, and you've got to grab it because it shows that tension. I mean, they were going at it. I mean, and Marchand was not giving up, and neither was Blanche.
It's really fascinating, just the personal and the psychology of it all. I think it brings it home to all of us, right? We all rely on the system as we should, but it is so much about emotion and psychology. All right, thank you all very much. And next, longtime Trump critic George Conway was there in the courtroom today, feet from the former president. What he says was the most damning hit to Trump today, plus new details about what Stormy Daniels is saying tonight about the hush money case and how threats to her have ramped up just since the trial started this week. We have exclusive new insight into Stormy Daniels' thinking right now, tonight, ahead of being a potential witness. And we are just moments away from a crucial vote to give Ukraine that much-needed and much-delayed aid. One of the leading voices holding it up, quote, Moscow Marjorie. Republicans have now turned on her in a big way.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
Lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, Trump egging on protesters to go to the New York courthouse where his hush money trial is taking place.
Outside, for great Americans, people that want to come down and they want to protest at the court, and they want to protest peacefully, we have more police presence here than anyone's ever seen. For blocks, you can't get near this courthouse.
Well, Trump also falsely claimed that, quote, thousands of his supporters were, quote, turned away from court today. The reality of it is this. The fact is his supporters are allowed outside the courthouse. Just the facts are so far in his trial, not many have showed up. Out front now, George Conway. He watched Trump's trial today from inside the courtroom. He's been inside many days so far. And he's joining me also to talk about his nearly $1 million donation to President Biden. He's about to headline a major fundraiser for the first time for the president tomorrow. And talking about this, here, George, publicly, you know, on TV for the first time. I just want to start with where you spent your day and you spent other days.
Yeah,
and
that's there in this was courtroom. No cordon keeping people away from
no,
that courthouse.
Well, not that I saw when I was there yesterday.
I think his problem is that people aren't, his supporters aren't willing to pay the subway fare to go down there.
So you've been watching him closely for years and now you're there. I mean, feet away from him. You're in the criminal trial, so you're in the room. You're watching. Yeah. Every single thing said, his response, how it's handled. What moment struck you the most today?
It struck me, I mean, first of all, the two moments that struck me were one, when the judge basically challenged Trump's lawyer on the gag order and basically said, you're losing all credibility. And he was Todd Blanche was making these arguments that just were not even close to being anything that was in the zone of convincing or credible. I mean, arguing essentially that retweets don't count, even though, you know, Trump boasts that when he puts something on Truth Social, it amplifies it and everybody learns about it.
Right.
And then the fact that he actually modified what the Fox anchor said about juror number two.
Oh, right.
And the fact that, it was just... The fact that he was arguing that retweets don't count, the fact that he was arguing that...
Yeah, because he would retweet in quotes when someone says something pejorative about a witness.
And the other argument was that somehow there was an exception to the gag order if somebody made a political attack on him, even if it was a witness and this stuff. First of all, there's no exception for that in the gag order. You just can't attack witnesses. And the witnesses have the right to say whatever they want because they're witnesses. They're not the criminal defendant. And also... It was that the witnesses were, there wasn't anything he was actually responding to. The Blanche couldn't point to what it was that Trump was responding to.
Right, and said political motivated attacks, and couldn't list one.
Right, and he couldn't list one. And at points there was, Marchand was saying, okay, but this, the timing of what you're saying doesn't make any sense. And it just went downhill from there. And I almost felt bad for Todd Blanche, but that's what happens when you represent a guy who's just going out there. Oh, and my favorite moment there, and that part of it was, Blanche said, my client is trying very, very hard to comply with the order. And that just set you could just see the judge looking at Blanche like, oh, come on.
You got to be kidding me.
You know, he's looking for ways around it.
We get that ruling any moment. It could come any moment.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, it'll probably be a fine at this point. But obviously it could end up with prison time if he keeps doing it. I mean, it's a serious thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it should be a fine. But then I think there has to be a warning. Like, okay, I'm going to put you in for an hour or 2 hours. You keep doing this.
Well, and then it goes.
Yeah.
All right, so... Look, George, you're obviously a very well-known conservative lawyer, and you've made your career and your reputation on that, right, for decades. Okay. And then, you know, you had a moment you became a Trump critic.
Yeah.
And you did so at great personal cost. This has had great, great, great cost in your family and your personal life. You have done it because you believe in it deeply.
Right.
And now you are giving Biden the maximum amount that somebody can give Joe Biden.
Yeah.
$929,600 that you have earned over your life to a person running for president. So How in the world did you get there?
Yeah, no, that's just an amazing story to me. If you told me that I would do something like that and support a Democrat, and tomorrow night I'm going to be headlining a fundraiser in Washington asking Democrats to give to a Democrat, I would have said, well, you know, that's just pure fantasy. That would never happen. But the evolution was just watching how the Republican Party has become something that's completely unrecognizable. It's become a personality. It's become essentially, you know, one of the things that sort of attracted people to the Republican Party in the 60s, 70s, and 80s was a feeling that the left had become anti-American. And right now, the people who are anti-American are the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world and the people in the House of Representatives who are basically voting and trying to block aid to American allies because they want to help Donald Trump create an issue for the campaign on border. It doesn't even make any sense. And this man, 4 years ago, I voted in my 10th presidential election. And I, for the first time, cast the vote for the Democrat. And
first time.
First time out of 10. And I did that because I felt that Donald Trump was a threat to the country, a threat to democracy. He doesn't care a whit about the country. He doesn't care a whit about the Constitution, about the rule of law. And he wants to undermine the country and its rule of law for his own political purposes. And that was before January 6th. That was before he actually tried.
But George, what I'm also curious about, and I guess I put the emphasis on $929,600. Yeah. Most people can't imagine giving $929 right. to a person running for office, right? It's just an ugly thing. They don't want to. So you're doing this, and you know, you've been working your life as a lawyer. Yeah. You've got children. You're choosing to do this. And I know it didn't come. I mean, there was a moment, right, where what happened? No,
I'm driving my car, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to ask these people to give money. I hate asking people to give money. I don't even like asking people to give me money that they actually owe me. And I'm trying to think, well, I need to, you know, I want to set an example. And I thought about what the law, you know, I've only given once to a Democrat, but that was only for a lunch for somebody who was being honored, a law partner of mine. Yeah. And I gave $30,000 to the Trump Victory Fund in 2016. But, you know, my wife was running the campaign, and it was a reasonable amount then. And I thought, well, why am I doing this? And I thought, it's like, this is for all the marbles. This man, I mean, after what we saw on January 6th, what we saw afterwards, and what we see him now saying, that he basically wants to turn the government into a vehicle for retribution against his political enemies. He wants to turn the country into a banana republic, which he tried to do 4 years ago. And I thought, you know, there's nothing more important than this. And yeah, it's going to come out of my kids' inheritance, but the most important thing they can inherit is living in a constitutional democracy. And that was the moment where I said, I have to do everything I can. I'm going to give the maximum, and I'm not going to regret it. I mean, I'll regret not doing it.
And I know you're emotional now. Yeah. How did your children react?
Yeah, well, my oldest daughter said, well, oh, why don't you write me a check for that amount of money? He said, you'll get it. You'll get something someday. You'll end up spending it in one place anyway.
But they understood. They understood that you did this.
Well, I don't know that the eldest one who I had the conversation with quite understood. But I hope someday she will.
All right. Well, George, thank you for sharing this.
Yeah.
And for talking about it. And I know you will be headlining that fundraiser tomorrow in Washington. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously going to be a significant moment for you, and a hard one in some ways and an easy one in others.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And next, Stormy Daniels could soon be called to testify against Trump. Why she's getting more scared as the trial goes on. We've got exclusive new details from a colleague and confidant. Plus, breaking news as we are standing by for that crucial vote on Ukraine aid. Finally, as Republicans turn on the woman who tried to stop it all, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
She's uninformed. She is a total waste of time. She is a horrible leader. She is dragging our brand down.
Breaking news, desperately needed Ukraine aid, looking like it is headed for final passage in the Senate tonight. Not a minute too soon. Ukraine has been outgunned on the battlefield now for a long time. The aid has been held up, and held up maybe in a way that cannot be made up for. Held up by congressional hardliners on the right. And the most prominent of them is Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's threatening to oust Speaker Mike Johnson for supporting this aid. And tonight, in a remarkable moment, a senior Republican senator is calling out his fellow Republican, saying that Greene's shenanigans could cost Republicans to lose control of Congress.
I think she's uninformed. She is a total waste of time. She is a horrible leader. She is dragging our brand down. She, not the Democrats, are the biggest risk to us getting back to a majority.
Now, those are incredible words. Sitting Republican Senator Manu Raju is out front live on Capitol Hill. And Manu, I mean, the bill is expected to pass, be signed quickly by President Biden. It has been held up for months and months, though. The damage from that is very significant. And this whole situation has now opened up a huge and unprecedented rift in the Republican Party.
Yeah, this is a major rift, oftentimes between the Republican leadership and some members in their party, people on the hard right, both going after Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader who helped usher this package through the Senate and is now pushing this bill that passed the House. And of course, Mike Johnson himself facing that threat that could call for his ouster, that vote that could happen on the floor if Marjorie Taylor Greene or any of those other hardliners decides to move forward with it. A real debate within the Republican Party, too, about the U.S. presence in the world. The so-called isolationist wing of the party versus those who support a more robust U.S. presence. Mitch McConnell very much on the side of a more robust U.S. presence. Mike Johnson increasingly has aligned himself with the Mitch McConnell wing of the party. The question, though, is where does this go from here? You have some other Republican senators beyond Tom Tillis are taking aim at the GOP hardliners for going after Mike Johnson and warning them not to move ahead with such a plan about the implications if they do.
There's some folks who try and get themselves as many tweets, as many followers as they can, a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing.
Turn your angst toward the real adversary, your real political opponents, and it's certainly not Mike Johnson. I mean, my gosh, if he's not good enough, no one's going to be good enough.
But there are still so many questions about whether Mike Johnson can hang on and whether that vote will actually happen. The House is on a recess week this week. They get back next week. At that point, Marjorie Taylor Greene could call for such a vote, or any of those can. And will any Democrats come to Mike Johnson's defense? That remains a question all along. And then on the policy, Aaron, after months of internal GOP battling, this bill finally set to pass the United States Senate tonight. It passed today. It moved through a procedural hold today after 30 Republicans voted to advance it, Aaron. That is 8 more than voted for the Senate package about 2 months ago. Mitch McConnell arguing that he believes his party has turned the tide away from that isolationist wing of his party.
All right, Manu Raju, thank you very much. And I want to go straight to the former Republican Congressman Ken Buck of Colorado. He just resigned from Congress, in part because of the infighting in his party. Congressman, I'm glad to see you again. So you just heard Tom Tillis say Greene is failing. She could cost Republicans the majority. You have been saying this for quite some time and been unafraid in so doing. But now you've got Tom Tillis doing it. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it is a conclusion that many are reaching on Capitol Hill and in America, frankly. The idea that a Republican believes that Russia is a country that we should be promoting, that anything having to do with the war criminal Putin is a good idea to promote is just a bad thing for America. And the national security implications of what Marjorie Taylor Greene is talking about are scary. They are undermining our ability to fight a very significant war on the mainland of Europe, a war that we haven't seen a tank battle in Europe since World War II, or since the 2014 when Russia invaded previously. But it is significant, and to have an American member of Congress supporting Russia, I didn't think I would see the day that would happen.
So Trump is now defending Johnson, and he had been unclear as to where he was going to come out of this, perhaps waiting to see where the winds blew. Well, now they're blowing for Johnson, and so now he's defending him. And obviously that's not a very subtle hint perhaps to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Here's Trump.
We have a majority of one, okay? So it's not like he can go and do whatever he wants to do. I think he's a very good person. It's a tough situation when you have one. I think he's a very good man. I think he's trying very hard.
Again, that's all new, right? He was openly, cavorting with Marjorie Taylor Greene on her point of view. And now again, the winds have shifted. Do you think Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to go forward with putting the motion forward to remove Johnson, given what Trump is saying now, or no?
I do. I think that she will probably file the motion to vacate. I think that President Trump came out against the very bills that are the basis for Marjorie Taylor Greene's position. And I think that ultimately Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson, will be in office as Speaker until the end of this year, at a minimum. We'll see what happens with the election in November. But I don't think that Marjorie Taylor Greene is gaining traction in what she's trying to do.
But when you talk about the bills that she is against and that Trump is against, too, that's why she was against them. We're talking about this Ukraine bill, among others. It was actually on the show, Congressman, you referred to Marjorie Taylor Greene as Moscow Marjorie, and it seems to have stuck. I know you're aware of this, but Russian state television is now showing a New York Post cover using your nickname for Marjorie Taylor Greene, Moscow Marjorie, and they are now taking it a step further. Listen to what they said.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, you've just shown, is a beauty. She is one of a few members of the U.S. Congress who is trying to look like a person in an old-fashioned sense of the word. She is a blonde who wears white coats with a fur collar. She is demonstratively heterosexual.
She's a beauty, a blonde, demonstratively heterosexual. This is what they're saying, right? And this is as they show Moscow Marjorie on the New York Post. And the Russian press at the same time is going after Speaker Johnson, openly insulting him. Just a few of the headlines: scatterbrain, brainwashed, the look of a traitor. Now, Congressman, I mean, you really started something here. And it's now part of what the discussion is over there. I mean, I'm just showing everyone all the different places that Marjorie Taylor Greene is now appearing in Russian television. What does this tell you about how important Greene is, her point of view, and the Republicans who are pushing that are to Putin and Russian state media?
Well, I think that any time the propaganda arm of a war criminal like Vladimir Putin is talking about how beautiful Marjorie Taylor Greene is or how smart she is, I think that would be an insult to any other American other than Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't know how she's going to react, but I can tell you that Mike Johnson is very happy that the Russians think less of him. Let them talk about how bad Mike Johnson is. I campaigned. I went around my district and talked to people about the fact that Vladimir Putin barred me from going to Russia. Every single time I mentioned that, I got standing ovations. Having an enemy like Vladimir Putin is a good thing in America.
All right. Well, Congressman Buck, I appreciate your time, and thank you very much. And next, Stormy Daniels.
Thank you.
She's worried about her safety. She may have to testify, of course, in this trial. Her close friend speaking to her tonight will be with us. And tonight, she has exclusive new information on Daniels' reaction to the case. And do you remember this cover? Ted Cruz's father linked to JFK's assassination? Well, tonight, this special report on how the National Enquirer was helping Trump's campaign.
The assignment with me, Audie Cornish.
So there have been arrests, suspensions, disciplinary hearings. They're shutting down graduation events.
At this moment, the part of the protests that are admirable are young people calling attention to atrocities.
Michael Roth is the president of Wesleyan University.
I would like to make a space for them to do that, as long as that space doesn't prevent other people from pursuing their education.
Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Tonight, I'm scared. Those are the exact words of Stormy Daniels, revealing that threats against her have ramped up significantly since the hush money trial began. Daniels does not have security. She's worried about coming to New York to testify. That is according to the director of her documentary, who's also a friend and confidant now, exclusively telling Out Front that Daniels also feels she is constantly being undermined as a witness in the case. Daniels is talking about how she is preparing for her moment in court with Trump in her documentary, Stormy.
I'm more prepared with my legal knowledge, but I'm also tired. Like, my soul is so tired.
Sarah Gibson is a close friend and confidant of Daniel's, and she is sharing these new details out front. And Sarah also is the director of the documentary you just saw that clip from, Stormy. And Sarah, I know you worked with Daniel's for 5 years while you worked on this documentary. So you really have seen her life, seen how this has impacted her life. And I know you've remained close and you have just been in touch with her. What else is she telling you?
Well, she's, a single working mother trying to make a living for her family, and she's had to really put her whole life on hold, all of her projects, all of her appearances, while she prepares to potentially testify. And they haven't told her when she's going to testify, but she's got to be ready to kind of drop everything and travel to New York. She's had to go several times to meet with the prosecutors, which she's willingly done, but she's had to take time out of her schedule and time out of her life. Often spending her own money. She's not a wealthy person. She doesn't have 24-hour security detail. And the threats on her Twitter have been increasing and getting scary. And I think she's just ready for all of this to be over so she can move on with her life.
I mean, there is a moment in your film where Stormy expresses remorse, and her specific remorse is for not being able to stop Trump. And she tells you that she wishes she had the opportunity in 2011 to get this story out before Trump even ran for president, before this trial was even, you know, a possibility. And I just wanted to play part of that clip and the conversation she had with you.
To this day, I blame myself and I have not forgiven myself because I didn't shut his down in that moment. So maybe make him pause before he tried it with someone else. The hardest part about all of this is I feel like I am partially responsible for every woman that could have come after me.
It's just a very revealing thing to say. You talk about these threats that are ramping up against her. She has to be ready to just, you know, put everything down, leave her child and fly to New York and be in a trial and no security. How does she even deal with that right now?
It's really stressful. She's trying not to pay attention too much to the news because I think it really makes her anxious. I think that she is a person who has shown during the trial with Michael Avenatti that she is more than able to hold her own on the stand. And she'll be a really good witness if she is called, and she'll show up for it and she'll do a great job. But I think the lead up to it is really freaking her out, honestly.
Melania Trump, we've been told, has called this trial a disgrace. And obviously, in the past, she has had some pretty unpleasant things to say about Stormy Daniels. And here she is, actually a clip, but audio, of her talking to her former chief of staff, Stephanie Grisham. Listen to this.
If you go Google and read it. And Annie Leibovitz shot the porn hooker, and she will be one of the issues September or October.
What do you mean she shot the porn hooker?
Stormy.
And that was Stephanie Winston Wolkoff. Stephanie Grisham, who was the chief of staff for Melania Trump, was on the show last night. She told us Melania is taking in every ounce of this trial, looking for proof, looking for, oh, is there something in an email that was sent that is proof of this? The actual affair itself, which, of course, is not what this trial is about. This trial is about the cover-up, not the affair or the incident itself. So what has Daniel's reaction been to Melania and her role in all of this?
Well, we didn't really interview Stormy about Melania. We did interview Stormy about what her life was like when she met Trump, and she was a single working director in the entertainment industry and was 27 years old and was just looking to make something of her life and her career. And Trump was 60 when she met him. He was married. He had a 4-month son at home. And she really feels like she isn't really the one that should be apologizing here.
Yeah.
She hasn't really said anything much about Melania except for Stormy does know, you know, what it's like to be a new mom, having just had a baby, and how emotional that time is in your life. And we've talked a lot about how this must have been very painful for Melania and how she deserved better and didn't deserve this.
All right. Well, as you point out, it is not Stormy's cross to bear what happened in that situation. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
And next, a special report on how these covers that you're looking at now were part of the National Enquirer's plan to help Trump's campaign. Breaking news, Trump attacking Michael Cohen in a new interview. Quote, he's a liar with no credibility. Despite a judge deciding right now whether Trump violated a gag order for recent attacks on Cohen, who, of course, is a crucial witness in the case. This is the National Enquirer boss, David Pecker, testifying today. He was in constant contact with Michael Cohen during the 2016 election. Jason Carroll is out front.
It is a tabloid smear. And it is a smear that has come from Donald Trump and his henchmen.
In March of 2016, things had gotten really ugly between the GOP frontrunner Donald Trump and the one who was seen as a possible threat, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Trump taking jabs at Cruz's wife on Twitter.
Donald, you're a sniveling coward, and leave Heidi the hell alone.
The National Enquirer ran a headline alleging Cruz had five extramarital affairs.
This National Enquirer story is garbage. It is complete and utter lies.
Trump claimed he had nothing to do with it. The next month, the Enquirer goes after Cruz again, alleging his father was connected to the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
What was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the death, before the shooting? It's
crazy.
Horrible.
Donald Trump alleges that my dad was involved in assassinating JFK. Now, let's be clear. This is nuts.
Trump doubled down on the story and denied involvement with the tabloid.
All I did is point out the fact that on the cover of the National Enquirer, there was a picture of him and crazy Lee Harvey Oswald. I had nothing to do with it.
But it was not the only time the Enquirer set its sights on one of Trump's opponents, also targeting Hillary Clinton, claiming she had strokes, cancer, saying she had 6 months to live. And even going after his former fixer, Michael Cohen, after the hush money payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels became public and he fell from Trump's favor.
Yeah, it's propaganda, 100%.
Mark Landsman directed the documentary Scandalous, The Untold Story of the National Enquirer for CNN Films.
I think the Enquirer did a very good job of blurring the lines of fact and fiction. I think they were very instrumental in this dissolution of fact-based journalism in American culture and American media.
Blurring the lines with salacious headlines and stories. But it's not been all wrong. In 2007, the Enquirer did break the true story about John Edwards, the then Democratic presidential hopeful of having an affair and fathering a child with a former campaign staffer, a point Trump made when he defended the paper's credibility years later.
This was a magazine that, frankly, in many respects, should be very respected. They got OJ, they got Edwards.
And it should be noted that Senator Marco Rubio was another one of those who was seen as a Trump rival. He was another one of those targeted by the Enquirer back in 2016. He was actually asked about that today. He basically blew it off, saying that, isn't that the same publication that said Elvis was alive?
Right.
Shows you where some of them stand in this day and age.
All right. Jason Carroll, thank you very much. And thanks so much to all of you. Anderson starts now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So, you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.